In the fall each year we all congregate, the vows all gathered at the church of tailgate. The scriptures reading from the book of Munson, our favorite verse, my God of precious. Drunk and obnoxious, we're Georgia faith, ain't nothing finer in the land. Now the 3,000 of our best friends, it's Saturday in that thing.
Welcome to the Saturday Athens podcast. I am your host, Seth Saunders, and all of a sudden, week 7 is upon us. Feels like it snuck up on us, and we are fired up this week to have as our guest picker, Jake Crane, host of Crane & Company. Brother, we're happy to have you, man. Welcome to the show, Jake.
Yeah, man, excited to be on. Thanks for reaching out, and man, it's amazing how fast the season goes. I mean, whether it was playing or when I was coaching or, you know, just now doing the sports media, regardless of what arena of the sport you're in, once it gets here, it just absolutely skates. So, you know, we have football like every day now. I'm loving it on Tuesdays, obviously Monday Night Football, then Tuesday night Conference USA. We have all these G5 conferences during the week. It's my favorite time of year, man. And playoff baseball, come on. Score, Braves. Score, please.
Well, I'm a little sensitive on the baseball piece of it. I am a long-suffering 35-plus years Orioles fan, so it's been a miserable 4 days for me. My boys are out.
That was tough. That baseball is such a fickle mistress. You know, you play so good for 162 games. But I will say, y'all are in a lot better spot than y'all were. You know, at least you're arguing about getting bounced in the first round as opposed to how bad can we possibly be.
Hey, you got that right, man. And, you know, look, we had a couple spots in the 90s, and then obviously the run with Buck in the 2010s was good. But I feel like from a sustainability perspective, what Mike Elias has put in place, what they're doing with international scouting, all those things, I mean, I'm fired up about it. It's just
y'all are here to stay for sure. This isn't a flash in the pan.
It feels better for sure. Yeah, man, it's good. Well, look, I think we're going to get along just fine because my understanding is you were a college baseball player, and so was I.
Yeah,
so,
man, love it. Love it.
So I think things will go well today. Well, look, I want to ask you this. 7 weeks in, what has been the biggest surprise of the season for you thus far?
Outside of Mario Cristobal not taking a knee the other night, I'd probably say the biggest surprise is that I don't think, and this is the first time I think we can say this in a while. I know TCU made the national championship game last year, but for the first time in a long time, I think we actually don't know. There's not that one team sitting on the Golden Hill that we're looking at and saying, all right, that's the best team in the country. Can any of these other teams develop enough? Or, hey, these are the two or three best teams in the country, without a doubt. They are just gaps and oceans wide better than everybody else. Can anybody catch them? There's still a lot of chaos that can happen. I mean, I'm opening up our show on Thursday with, you know, this is the year of the Joker in college football. There's so much chaos from possibly having three undefeated ACC teams at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. You look at Texas and Oklahoma and their last stance in the Big 12, possibly going at it again in the Big 12 championship. The Pac-12 is the best conference in college football, at least up to this point. I love it. I think it's great for the sport. I'm a college football purist, a football purist in general, but I do think this is a blip on the radar screen. So I think the overall just lack of definitiveness, if that's a word, halfway through the season has been the biggest surprise. But, I mean, outside of that, obviously the Pac-12, right? I mean, I think that's a pretty easy answer.
How funny is it that in their swan song, after being the butt of so many jokes during the CFP era, they could be the belle of the ball, right? And so,
for sure,
it's been fascinating, I think, to watch that. And some of that is, like football is, man, it's a quarterback-driven sport, right? And they got a lot of good guys under center in that conference right now, and I think it's driving some of that. Okay, obviously, massive matchup in that conference to stay on that thread this weekend. Oregon and Washington playing each other. Obviously, big-time quarterbacks for both those programs with Bo Nix and Michael Penix. I want to ask you a little bit about Washington because I thought that last year they were one of the least talked-about programs given the product they actually put on the field. I mean, they were essentially Tennessee West from an offensive perspective. Just lit up the field, lit up the scoreboard, and they brought that back. You know, early season, they had three guys who looked like might go for 1,000 yards in the receiving core. I think they still get at least two and could get three. But what have you seen from them? What has impressed you about them through this first 7 weeks?
Well, you know, everybody talks about Michael Penix, and they should. Everybody talks about Udunze and Polk and McMillan, and they should. But I think the offensive line's kind of punched above their weight a little bit. When you look at the sack percentage that they're giving up, I mean, I think they've given up 3 sacks the whole year. And that's not just a symptom of an offense that gets the ball out quick a lot. You know, that they basically run a similar system to what Josh Heupel runs. That there are differences. I think the passing game is a little more intricate out there with what DeBoer does. But I think it's the offensive line. And when I look at this Washington team, you know, I kind of put them right now in the same category with USC. I actually feel like I know more about the USC defense, not saying that's a good thing, than I do the Washington defense. But when you look at them, it's easy to sit here and point, look, Michael Penix, he's got a cannon. He can make every throw. He can stretch you vertically. He's good in the intermediate. He's good in the short game. As we say, he can throw the fastball and the changeup, which is something I don't think Joe Milton can do, speaking of Tennessee. But when you look at this offense, one of the reasons that they've been successful, because it truly is a pass first, run as a counter offense. They run the ball less than 40% of the time. But this offensive line, when the defense knows that you're passing it a lot, they're basically in a predictable passing down every down, yet you're still able to protect against the different looks that you get. And it's not like they have the most talented offensive line in the country. They don't have the best personnel, but they really do a good job of communicating. You don't see a lot of busts in the different protections that they run. So I would have to say the offensive line, I don't think people talk enough about the job that they've done. I think that's going to be one of the reasons, though, that Oregon does beat Washington. I know we're going to get there, but it's. I think this offensive line is about to really get tested like they haven't gotten tested all season.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that matchup this weekend. And, you know, I think nationally, that is one of the more underrated rivalries in the country. And I say that, not out there, right? Everybody that there knows it and feels it. But I think nationally, people do not understand the malice that exists between those two programs. And so for them to be where they both are at the top of the heap right now, man, I just think that's going to be such a fun matchup Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
In what I think is a bit of a sneaky slate this weekend. Good.
No, I think it is too. I think it's sneaky as well. I agree. I always say, look, with rivalries, you know, hate's an equal opportunity employer. Yeah. It doesn't care if you're on the West Coast, if you're on the East Coast, if you're in the Midwest, you know, if you're in the Northeast. And this game has turned in. I mean, these are two big brands, obviously, in the Pac-12. You see what they're doing now, you know, moving and going to the Big Ten. They were two of the teams that, you know, volunteered as tribute, to use a Hunger Games reference, to go play in the Big Ten and go with, you know, Sacagawea across the country and go play. But look, I think this game, you know, when I look at it, I do believe Oregon, the difference is I think Oregon has more team balance. Mm-hmm. I think one of these teams has an elite offense. I think one of these teams is an elite team. I think one of the reasons that I picked Oregon before the season to win the Pac-12, and it's not just because I believe in Dan, and Dan's going to try and build an SEC-style team out in the Pac-12 now going to the Big Ten, which that's going to come in handy as you're making that transition anyway. It's that when I look at Oregon, because there's always those two or three times, even the best offenses in the world in every sport, they have those times where they struggle a little bit. I've seen the Warriors not be able to hit threes in a couple games. I've watched the Kansas City Chiefs not be able to score a ton of points in a couple games. I've watched the Atlanta Braves get it shoved down their throat for 15 straight innings, you know, after a historic run they just made in the regular season offensively. So when that happens, do you have enough team balance where if the offense isn't clicking at its highest efficiency, that you can still win the game against a quality opponent? I think if Oregon goes up to Washington and doesn't play at the top of their game offensively, their defense is good enough and their special teams are good enough to win the game, and they can run the ball. And then if Washington goes up and doesn't play good offensively, I don't think Washington's defense is good enough to slow Oregon down enough to be able to win that game. So, you know, you have two mega offenses playing against each other, but I think you have one elite team. I mean, you look at Oregon's run game, what they're able to do, that opens up the pass, opens up the play action. You have a quarterback in Bo Nix that's a runner. Not that Penix can't run it, but Washington is more of a one-trick pony offensively, and it's a hell of a trick. But if it's not clicking, and I'll give you a number. This is, and I'm not typically one of these guys that just dives down into, well, you know, on 3rd and 6 and it's a full moon after you ate ribs on a Tuesday, there's a 25% chance for you to win. Like, I'm not one of those guys. But I do look at statistics that I think matter. And when you look at Oregon, they're ranked not dead last, but they're not ranked very high when it comes down to completion percentage against, right? So how many passes you're giving up being completed. But they're top 5 in the country in yards given up per pass. So what does that mean? That means they tackle really well in space. And when you play an offense like Washington that supplements the run game with the quick pass game, that wants to get the ball out quick, that wants to use every blade of grass, a lot of their big plays aren't on the vertical ball. They're not on the post. They're on short passes where you get yak yardage after the catch. If you can get them down, you can keep them off schedule. And I think Oregon is good enough in the back end with Reed and Evan Williams. I mean, I always trust a guy named Evan Williams. I don't care what he's doing. But I think they're good enough in the back end to get Washington on the ground and kind of stifle them enough to where their offense can score enough to win the game.
I want to stay on the West Coast. I want to ask you about a program, and this is going to be a very out of left field question, but there was an article in The Athletic about them this week, and it fascinated me for a number of different reasons, and I want you to go down a little bit of a rabbit hole with me. But I want to talk to you about UNLV. The Rebels are sitting at 4-1 right now. Barry Odom is back in the cockpit as head coach. Wanted to be back there so badly. I think that's one of the things that's been undersold about Arkansas' storyline this year.
Yes, I agree.
But a couple things from that article stuck out to me. Number one, they asked Coach Odom about the success of the team thus far, and he said, well, I'll tell you what we do. We give everybody in practice equal reps. And I took that from Coach Pittman in my first 2 years at Arkansas, who took it from Kirby Smart at Georgia. So I thought that was a fascinating piece to that. The other thing I thought was so interesting about it, and this kind of touches on a personal piece for me, but I want to talk about Brennan Marion a little bit, okay? And a name that folks maybe that aren't attuned to him should look out for. Brennan Marion is the offensive coordinator there at UNLV. They are lighting up the scoreboard this year. He runs something called the Go-Go Offense, which is essentially mixing triple option concepts with spread concepts. And they do a lot of eye candy stuff, you know, pre-snap motions, all these type things. And it's awesome. And the reason it's a heart piece for me is he was the offensive coordinator at William & Mary, which is my alumni. So I watched it happen there and how it kind of shifted the program there under Mike London. And it's kind of cool to see him shift there. The other neat part about his story, I think, is he was a wide receiver at Tulsa, led the country in yards per catch, his quarterback at Tulsa, Texas State head coach, G.J. Kenny.
Yeah.
So just a lot of cool avenues mixing there. And I don't know, man, I just thought it was cool to give UNLV some love and kind of watch them. They play Nevada this weekend, who's obviously down this year. But I don't know, man, what are your thoughts on that program so far and what Barry Odom has done to turn them around?
Well, you know, I don't think people really understand the job that Barry Odom did at Arkansas with what he was given personnel-wise.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you talk about I know they had Bumper Pool, which, by the way, there's no way you're not going to be good if that's your name. I'm a firm believer in that. He had a couple guys, but they had no depth. Like, it was to the point where he was almost having to invent ways to stop people. And the fact that he did what he did with that defense, he deserved another chance. Mm-hmm. To get a head coaching job. And I'm with you. I don't think he gets the credit that he deserves. And I know the players love him too, if you ask anybody that ever played for him. I do want to say this real quick. William & Mary, one of the funniest things I've ever heard a coach say was when they asked Lou Holtz, when he was the head coach at William & Mary, why they lost. Have you ever heard this?
Oh, yeah.
Because they had too many Marys and not enough Williams.
That's right.
Dog, yeah. That's the funniest thing I've ever heard, Seth. Yeah. Like, if you really think about it, that is such a great – that is a high IQ – genius level hilarious. And thinking about it in Lou Holtz's voice is absolutely slays me every time. But you know, that offense, it is, you know, the RPO game is basically the triple option with the pass built in.
Yeah.
But what they do out there, there's a lot more window dressing with it, right? That they've kind of, you have your general RPO, you know, where you're able to give it, quarterback can keep it, quarterback can keep it and throw it. You're trying to manipulate the intermediate defender, whether that be the nickel, the down safety, whatever, defensive end with zone read, things like that. But it's like that, but in a mink coat. It's like way more dressed up.
Yeah.
And they mix that with mixing tempos. So it's kind of like a souped up nitrous version of the RPO we see, which obviously it works. I mean, look at what Kenny's doing.
Yeah.
Right? Like they're doing really well. Texas State is the Colorado of the G5 and nobody's talking about it.
That's
they just don't have Prime as their head coach with what they did in the portal. So yeah, I don't think enough people are talking about it. They need to continue to do it. But I tell you what, Barry keeps on doing it. He's not going to be at UNLV for long.
Nope. He's sure not, man. I just thought that was such a cool story. I love
that.
That
is a cool
highlighted.
Story. That is a cool story.
You know, speaking of Coach Holtz, you know, he was also pulling double duty when he was in Williamsburg. He was the golf coach in addition to being the football coach while he was the head guy there.
I can't, like, I've heard my father played in the Japan Bowl and Lou Holtz was the head coach over there.
Yeah.
And the stories, like, just of Lou Holtz, like, just cracking the gods. Like, apparently, he's legitimately hilarious. Like,
oh, yeah, dude.
Comedian level hilarious.
Oh, yeah. He's a time, man. Like, I've seen him speak a couple times, and it's laugh out loud funny because he's just quick as a whip, man. Like,
for
you
sure.
can tell he reads a ton and retains, and like, yeah, he's whip quick for sure. Well, look, let's pick some games, man. Like I said, I like this slate a lot. The thing I think is great about it is there's a lot of G5 big time games this week that I really love, and we're gonna get to highlight a bit of those. And one of
one Tuesday night that Coastal App game was must see television if you're a football degenerate like we are. I'm guessing.
Yeah, I love that we got Tuesday football now again. It's fantastic. And dude, we're not just talking one offs; multiple games Tuesday night. It was fantastic.
Oh, I know. It's amazing. It's like an adult Christmas for me.
Yeah. Well, so look, Friday night we got a big one in the American, top of the conference bout. Tulane going to Memphis, play at the Liberty Bowl, 7 p.m. Friday night. The number on that game, Tulane is a 3.5-point road favorite. What's your thoughts on this one?
Man, you know, it's a great matchup. You know, I love what you know, Silverfield's trying to do out there at Memphis. Still waiting on that first, like, really big win, you know, kind of in his coaching tenure out there, especially on the road against a higher-level team, because we've seen Memphis be able to do it. Tulane with Willie Fritz. Look, when I was coaching at South Alabama, we had to play Willie Fritz at Georgia Southern, and that was like getting just jumped by a gang of ninjas. It's just never fun. These guys always play hard. He runs a cool system. It's not exactly what he ran when he was at Georgia Southern against us, but it's a version of it. It's hard for me to bet against Michael Pratt. It's hard for me to bet against, you know, not that Hennigan can't play. I like him. I think he's sneaky athletic. This Memphis team has some pieces. They can really hit the home run. But what I like about Tulane is I just think Tulane is more physical. I think Tulane is a team. We saw them go up against Ole Miss in a game that, you know, if ifs and buts were candy and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas. But if they have Michael Pratt, I think it may be a different story at the end of that game compared to what happened.
Yep.
They tend to get up for big games up front. Are they as dominant as they were last year? No, and a lot of that has to do with Tajay Spears is running the ball with the Titans and Derrick Henry right now. He solved a lot of problems for them. But when I look at this game, Memphis is going to stay in it because it's at home. Memphis is a tough place to play. Last time I saw, I think it may be up to 4.5 now, believe it or not, which if it's at 4.5, this is probably going to be a game on the side I'm going to stay away from. I think the over may not be a bad play here. I think you're going to get some explosives from both sides, but I will take Willie Fritz and Tulane on the road. Give me a walk-off field goal to win it after Memphis ties it up late.
My co-host is also taking the Green Wave. I'm going to take the Tigers. I'm going to go with Memphis State.
Yeah.
Cover
or win?
Just to cover. No, I'm not taking them to win straight up. Just to cover.
Not a bad pick.
I like,
technically, I'm picking Memphis to cover if I'm taking the walk-off field goal. So we agree.
And that's what we're judging you on. So you're with me then. You're on Memphis.
Oh, yeah. Okay. My fault. Yeah. Good. I love this. Yeah. I love this. Yes. Yeah. Give me Memphis to cover. And it was 4.5 last time I saw on DraftKings, but if I'm going to take it at 4.5, I'm probably going to take it at 3.5, right? This game goes in threes and sevens, so let's do that.
Who's our guy from Memphis State, too? Number three, Rock Taylor? Is that the kid's name?
Yes.
I'll tell you something, man. I like that kid a lot. Really
good
player. Again,
names go a long way. Like, I just want to name my kid, like Chipper Harper or something. Or, like, Chipper Bryce Crane or something. I believe in that.
You got to give it the PA test to make sure it passes that. If it does,
that's exactly right.
We're
can't rhyme with anything bad. Like, it's got to definitely pass.
I'll tell you the game for me where I kind of turned a little bit on Memphis, and obviously they're having a great year, but man, I loved what they did when they played Mizzou. I just thought they looked, they were in that game. And look, Mizzou is showing now week after week, they're a damn good football team. And so I don't know, man. Something about Memphis being at home on a Friday night. Feel like weird things will be happening in October on a Friday night. I like it. So
Definitely, with a lot on the line. I mean, it's not like this game doesn't matter either. And Memphis, that they show out when they need to show out, and I think they have enough playmakers to where even if Tulane does get a 10-point lead, a 14-point lead, 13-point lead, Memphis can fight their way back because I think they do. I think Silverfield does a good job of trying to achieve somewhat balance, somewhat a stinge of balance on offense.
Yeah. All right, next one on the docket, and boy, I love this one. And I'll tell you another reason why this was on here. But we got a big one in the Fun Belt. We got Georgia Southern going to Harrisonburg to play JMU at noon on Saturday. JMU still not able to go in the postseason, which seems like the dumbest rule on the planet. Like,
the dumbest.
It's ridiculous. Well, so this is my co-host's alma mater. He is a mighty proud Duke. And so actually JMU and William Mary played each other in the FCS semifinals when we were both in undergrad, which he still lords over me because they went to Chattanooga and took home the title. I'm still a little bit salty about it, but that's neither here nor there. JMU having another fantastic year, 3.5-point home favorites. Is it ever not going to be weird that Georgia Southern has got Clay Helton as head coach and they fling the ball around the yard? It just feels weird that Georgia Southern's not ground and pound all day.
Well, it's funny you say that. My co-host, David Cones from Statesboro, played at Statesboro High for Buzz Busby. He was the only 6'7" triple option quarterback of all time. He went on to play at Michigan. But yeah, he talks about it all the time. You know, it's so weird now because it used to be, well, whoever the head coach that comes in here is running some version of the triple option. It's like the town's identity. It's almost like the town's mascot. And now they're out there flinging it. You know, they're seeing how many Wisconsin safeties they can throw interceptions to. But I tell you what. James Madison is an absolute wagon. Mm-hmm. Wagon. I've taken them every week. I took them against my alma mater, South Alabama. Mm-hmm. They just put the windows down and cruise through that one. Give me James Madison. And look, I like Georgia Southern, right? They're a good story, right? Clay Helton, it's kind of a redemption story. But you know what else is a good story? Little Red Riding Hood and what happened to her. So give me James Madison to cover. I don't think it'd be crazy to ladder this one up. To buy it at 3.5, 4.5, 5.5, and 6.5. I'm telling you, James Madden is an absolute wagon.
Well, this is the easiest pick of the year for my co-host. He has taken Dukes all day. Not even nervous about it in the least. I'm with you boys, man. What they got going on there. And look, I have been saying this. I think you can say, not make an argument. I think you can say they are now the best FBS football program in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And I don't know if anybody can argue with you.
I don't think that's a crazy thing to say. I mean, what would be the spread right now if they play Virginia Tech on a neutral field? Virginia, right? Which we've seen. James Madison beat Virginia earlier in the year. Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah. I mean, who else am I worried about? Richmond? Wake Forest? Right? That's in Virginia, isn't it? No, it's not. It's in North Carolina. I'm losing my mind.
Not far, though.
I'm not a geography major, but yeah, geography doesn't matter anymore with conference alignment. So get out of my room, Dad.
All right, we talked about this one a lot. I think I know where you're leaning on this, but the big one of the weekend, Pac-12 matchup, Oregon going to Seattle to play Washington. I will say this, I always say this when we pick Washington, that is on my list. I need to get to Husky Stadium, and I need to do the whole harbor tailgate. I want to do the whole thing. I need to be on the lake, have a good time, on the sound, whatever it is. I'm there for it. Huskies are a 2.5-point home favorite. What you feeling on this?
God, I hate 2.5 so much. Just the worst number ever. I've got to go Oregon. I would put it on Oregon money line. I think it's like +142 last time I saw it. But you're going to give me the 2.5. I'll take the 2.5. Give me Oregon laying the points on the road.
My co-host and I have loved Washington the last 2 years. Love Michael Penix. My co-host has taken the Huskies. Man, this is the toughest one of the week for me because I love what they do on offense, but I'm with you. The thing that makes me nervous is I don't know who they are defensively. And in a game like this where you're going to be punching people in the mouth and going to face a little bit of adversity, the thing I like about Oregon is I know who Dan Lanning is. I knew who he was when he was in Athens. I knew what he would do when he went out there. That dude is a leader of young men. And like I just feel like he has got something going there. And regardless of what folks' opinions on it were, that freaking pregame speech before Colorado was electricity. Yeah. Like, it still makes me want to be the freaking Kool-Aid man and run through the wall. Like,
for sure. He learned from the best.
He sure did, man. And I love his story too, right? Because it's a story of grit. Like, I'm going to drive, get myself an interview with Coach Graham, and I'm just going to elbow my way into this because this is the only way I want to live my life is coaching kids and coaching college football. Like, if you can't get on board with that, you ain't got a pulse. And so, like,
for sure,
it's hard for me not to be Team Dan Lanning. And so, I don't know. I think they go on the road and do it, man. I think he's got something cooking there for sure. But I think it's going to be a monster ball game.
I do too. One thing, the new clock rule, right? I think that's going to have a little bit of effect in this game if Oregon gets up. And they're able to run the ball like I think they're going to run the ball in the fourth quarter. Do not be shocked if you look at that time of possession and they got it for about 9.5 minutes in that fourth quarter. Do not be shocked at all. Dan will do that. He'll do it in a second.
Yeah, he'll take the death march from old Kirby Paul Smart.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get downhill. Let's turn it into a luge contest.
All right. Next one on the docket. I think it's a who are you matchup, right? I think Texas A&M had a big opportunity last week to tell America who they were, and maybe they did in certain ways. But they got to go on the road to Rocky Top, play Tennessee. Tennessee, a 3.5-point home favorite in Neyland. I am really interested to see what the Volunteers look like in this matchup. How you feel about this one?
Man, I think this game is so fascinating to me that, you know, and everybody keeps talking about, and they're right, you don't play Bama and get healthier the next week, but I always like if we lost a big game or maybe lost a game that we weren't supposed to, playing a good opponent that mm-hmm. next weekend. It helps kind of narrow the focus. And this is a de facto elimination game, basically, for the SEC championship, even though these teams are in different divisions. Yep. A&M loses this one, you're Audi 5, bud, after losing to Bama. Tennessee loses this one, they can still beat Georgia and not have the tiebreaker if Georgia, if they beat Georgia at home, right? They'd have yep. two SEC losses. Sorry, I mean, this weather's got my nose running like crazy. I'm
That's all right.
bubbled it here. But, you know, I look at A&M, they're hell in the front seven. Tennessee is a more downhill team than they've ever been. The question in this game becomes, can Joe Milton hit open wide receivers routinely?
Yeah.
If he can, I think Tennessee scores enough points. I don't trust this Texas A&M team on the road offensively, and I'm not typically a trends guy, but they're 0-7 in their last true road games. And the two tests they've had this year on the road, or the two big tests they've had, one on the road, which they failed miserably, and then one at home, which they failed at the end, they lost them both in the same way. So I think Tennessee's receivers, whether it's Squirrel White, you can go down the list of the guys they have on the outside. I know yep. Brew McCoy's hurt. They're going to be open. I'll take Tennessee, even though I hate 3.5. If you're going to bet it, buy that thing down to 2.5. But if we're going to take it just straight up, give it to me 3.5.
My co-host is taking the Aggies. For me, man, and this is something I've been on the last couple of years, I just don't trust Jimbo's teams, man. I really don't.
You shouldn't. Why yeah. should you? Yeah. Why should you?
It's just been a recurring thing. Like, everybody talks about them, and they're going to be this, and they're going to be that. And brother, it's the same story every year. I mean, it's just like a whimper all the way to the finish line. I just can't do it, man. And I can't see them going in to Neyland in that environment and coming out with a win. I just don't see it, man. And look, this isn't any kind of like, you know, affirmation of Tennessee and what Joe Milton's done or any of those things, because I am still very much on the fence with them. I just think, given the home field and given how they're constructed, I trust them more than I trust A&M. That's essentially the point.
Yeah, look, we have a saying on our show, if somebody shows you who they are enough, you probably should believe them.
That's A&M, man. I mean, that is it in a nutshell, especially Jimbo's A&M. I mean, it's just...
they're like in Hall Pass when they like think that girl's good looking and then yeah. he does it like this. He's like, wait a minute, let me show you. And then it's yeah. like, oh my gosh,
yep.
she's a witch.
That's it, man. That is it. All right, this one I think is interesting just because, look, it's a great historical matchup, right? Two big behemoths from the West historically. You got Auburn going to Death Valley to play LSU. LSU can't stop a nosebleed, and Auburn I don't think could score on a JV high school team. So it's like the meeting of the wills here, right? But here's the thing I am a little bit curious about is, what's Hugh Freeze got cooking coming out of a bye week, right? And did they find a little something in the near miss against Georgia? I think that defense has some pieces, man. And so do they have enough pieces to shut down what I think is the best wide receiver duo in America? I don't know about all that. But LSU, 10.5-point home favorite in Death Valley. What you thinking on this one?
Yeah, look, the LSU-Auburn series, it's just, you know, I said on the show, it's like that weird kid you grew up with that like put mayonnaise on his hot dog and just like really loved insects way too much. Like, it was just weird. Like, he's always touching them and stuff. Like, you had earthquakes, fires, you know, 5 interceptions, second halves, just something. There's a solar eclipse that's happening like
that's right
before the game.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
Like, if aliens landed halfway through the second quarter of Auburn-LSU, I'd be like, makes sense. Right. You know, that's written on a tablet somewhere buried underneath the pyramids. But, you know, Auburn's passing offense versus LSU's passing defense, it's a cripple fight. That's what it is. It's like off South Park. I mean, it's a cripple fight. But I will say, I think LSU, not even wide receiver group, I think LSU may have the best offense in the country.
Yeah.
If I'm looking at LSU and USC, I am taking LSU's offense because of their offensive line, and I will stand by that. I think their offensive line is better than USC's. And Jaden Daniels, you know, his biggest problem is he runs vertically. He runs straight up and down, and he doesn't yep. slide. He doesn't go out of bounds. You know, I think he thinks he's like Josh Allen, which Josh Allen shouldn't even do that, but he does. Here's my problem. Auburn with Peyton Thorne at quarterback. I watched him go on the road at Cal. He could barely function.
Yeah.
I watched him go on the road at Kyle Field. It looked like he was watching The Conjuring in a graveyard in the middle of the night. So if you think that's bad, you're about to go into Death Valley at LSU, which the best way I can describe it, it's like Mordor. Like there's orcs being born in the mud during the game. Like they're just monsters. You're getting flicked off by kids that 3 hours earlier were legitimately playing with Legos for fun. So if you're going to not be able to perform on the road, Death Valley is not a good place to do it. I think Auburn can run the ball a little bit on LSU. I think it's going to come down to whether they can throw the ball on third and medium. I think they're going to be in a lot of third and mediums.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
And Auburn's got a really good secondary. They've got some pieces on defense. They've got some young pieces that I really like. And this is the worst team Hugh Freeze is going to have, right? It's year one, kind of feeling it out. But they don't have a pass rush. The only way they get pressure is by bringing pressure. And if you're going to do that, eventually Jaden Daniels is going to get out of there. And you're going to be in man with your back turned. He's going to take off. Or he's going to let one of those aliens run around on the outside like Brian Thomas Jr. or Malik Nabers or even Mason Taylor at tight end on the inside go make a play. And if you're going to bring pressure, well, you don't have a lot of help if you miss tackles. I don't think Auburn can win in a track meet in this game. So what's the answer? Try to limit their possessions. Make them drive in between the 20s and kick field goals. I don't think it'll be enough. I like LSU 41-24 in this game. So give me the LSU cover on the 10.5.
My co-host has taken the Tigers too. I am also on the Bayou Bengals. My reasoning is thus. I watched Auburn play against one alumnus of the Xavier School for Gifted Youngsters in Brock Bowers. And now I'm going to get to watch him play against two more alumnus in Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. I just feel like those dudes are going to be like Thanos. Inevitable. I mean, just going to tear that defense.
And Brian Thomas Jr. is the freakiest one of the two. He's 6'5". Watch him move. Guys don't move like that. Nope. That are that size, that have quick twitch like that. That just doesn't. Malik Nabers is a pro, 100% pro. Brian Thomas is going to be studied hundreds of years from now to see like his hips, his flexibility, his ankles, his acceleration, and his ability to stop and start is just nuts at that size. I mean, it really is when you look at him. So it's a tough matchup, man. I'm with you. I like LSU. They're scary. They're as bad scary, as they are on defense, and they know they're bad on defense. So what does that mean on offense? Well, if we got to score 60, we'll score 60. And believe me, they can score 60 against anybody.
And look, man, at some point, right, Harold Perkins got to appear. The Harold Perkins of old got to show up at some point. I don't know if it's this weekend, but it's got to happen at some point. I mean, that offense covers up a lot of warts, brother. I mean, and they got warts, big ones. But
they do. They're electric. It's been kissing and rubbing on frogs.
All right, man. The next one. This is fascinating for me. This stinks out loud. A capital S. Okay, USC going to South Bend to play Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. Notre Dame is a 2.5-point home favorite in this ball game. I can't make heads or tails of it, man. So walk me through it. How do we get to this number?
Well, you know, I think it's a couple of reasons. I think it shows you what Vegas thinks about USC's defense.
Yeah.
And I think there's another kind of caveat in here. Everybody's talking about, oh, well, now Notre Dame, they're in the dream crusher spot, right? Your dreams just got crushed. You know, you're not going to be able to make the college football playoff. You know, it's funny. They said the same thing about Clemson going to Syracuse, and Clemson played one of their best games. Look, I think what you're going to see on Saturday is a pissed off Notre Dame team. That's what I think you're going to see. A Notre Dame team that lost Ohio State because they couldn't count to 11. And then a team that lost to Louisville. I said that right, actually, Louisville. Because of arrogance. They thought they were going to be able to go out there and just line up in big boy Louisville. And Louisville was going to take it at home. And Louisville did not take it. There wasn't a bunch of smoke and mirrors that Louisville ran on defense. They held Notre Dame to, what, 43 rushing yards?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Estimate the guy that never goes backwards. He was going backwards more than the DBs were. So when I look at that, I think now it's in a spot where a lot of the pressure is off Notre Dame, right? And you don't want that. You don't want the pressure to be off. You want to still be in the hunt. But I think you're going to see a very angry, old team. Sam Hartman turned it over way too much last week. I think you're going to see a team that realizes they have a chance to now put some of that pain and anger in somebody else's season in USC coming in. I think Notre Dame dominates this game up front. Not that USC won't score. Caleb Williams and them are too good. But I think you see a Notre Dame team that a lot of us thought after the first three or four games that we were going to see more and more of and see against Louisville. Give me Notre Dame. I love this bet. I love taking Notre Dame in this spot. Give me that. Nobody gets more pissed after bad things than the Irish. So give me Notre Dame.
My co-host is taking the Trojans. This is one of those where there are gigantic buildings in Vegas for a reason. And so this game has me in a complete brain pretzel right now. Like, I don't know what to do with this because this is what my eyes have shown me, okay, is that Notre Dame has problems scoring the football. And if they face somebody who can score the football, even Jack Plummer led Louisville, they're going to have some issues. And so that makes me super nervous. But here's the thing, man. Like, USC got to play not just a road game, but a road game in South Bend, in the shadow of Touchdown Jesus, going halfway across the country. Man, there's just ghosts there, right? Like, I don't know. They're going to have the grass tall probably like they did.
All the pressure's on them, Seth.
Yeah.
All the pressure's on them.
Yeah.
Notre Dame, it's weird. Notre Dame's the favorite in this game, but all the pressure is not on them. The pressure's on USC. Notre Dame's out of it now. You can almost play loose, right? Yeah. Go out there and play free. Here's my thing, though. Like, you know what this team looks like, USC, this year? You know who they look like? They look like every other team that Lincoln Riley and Alex Grinch have ever had.
Yeah.
Great on offense. I mean, they're walking. They're the Globetrotters on offense. But defensively, you're having to beat Arizona at home in double OT with their backup quarterback. Not that Arizona. I love Jed Fish. But there's no business. This is the same USC defense that I saw last year, almost, maybe a little bit better. It's the same one we saw at Oklahoma when he had Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray and all these guys running around on offense, but they couldn't stop anybody to save their lives. I don't trust them. I don't trust them as far as I can throw them.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, too, the big one for me, dude, Notre Dame got beef up front. Like, I think they can establish the line of scrimmage and take USC out of what they want to do.
Make them play their tempo.
Yeah, yep. And tell me, who has USC played that you would say you brand as physical thus far? Nobody. And so, like, I don't know who they are in a grown man contest. And we're going to see Saturday because they're about to be.
Oh, you're going to find out. Yeah.
So I think I'm gonna ride with the Irish too, man. And look, I love South Bend. We went in 17 for the Dogs game, and like I fell in love with that place, man. And so it's hard for me to get away from it. But yeah, man, it is a must. And tell me when you do, because I'm gonna send you to all the spots we found while we were there.
Please do. Yeah, I'm so down.
Yeah, it is a must, man. All right, look, we got another one. This is one of my favorite matchups of the weekend. Probably nobody gonna talk about. We got a Mountain West tie up here. We got the Wyoming Cowboys going to Colorado Springs and Mighty Falcon Stadium to play the Air Force Falcons. And, dude, this is another one. What a number on this. Air Force, 10.5-point home favorites. Dude, Wyoming's only lost to Texas. Like, they're not having a down year or anything. I know Craig Bohl has had trouble at Falcon Stadium, but where are you sitting on this one?
Man, I think Air Force may be the best group of five team in the country. I mean, nobody talks about them. I've watched them play multiple times. They are true triple option. Yeah. There's no, hey, you know, we're kind of halfway in, halfway out. They run it like 95% of the time. Like, there's no tricks. There's no smoke and mirrors. I love the under in this game at 42.5 because Wyoming wants to line up and run the ball. That 10.5 is a big number. Ooh, that's a really big number in this game. Wyoming, they've won games in funky ways, right? You know, they blocked the field goal and run it back a couple weeks ago. Craig Bohl does a really good job as an underdog going into games. He struggles for some reason at home, right, when they're the favorite and it's a tight spread. But on the road, they may not win, but good teams don't win. Great teams cover. We all know that. So give me Wyoming plus the 10.5. I think Air Force could dominate this game. And just because the style of play and that new clock rule can keep this score within reason. So give me Wyoming on the 10.5.
My co's taking the Cowboys. I am too. They got something going on, man. They've been a good bet for me this year. I bet on them.
Know who they are. Yeah, they know who they are.
They know exactly who they are. The only thing that gives me a little pause is Coach Bowles 1-3 when he goes to Colorado Springs. The numbers haven't looked great, but I always feel like every year is independent of the other. So I'm gonna roll with the Cowboys on this, especially with that number, right? If this was maybe like 6.5, I'd feel a little bit differently. But dude, 10.5, I don't know, man. I just think this is gonna be a war. So yeah, I like the Cowboys in this one. Okay, this one is look. I don't know what the hell was going on last weekend on that sideline, but Miami going to Chapel Hill to play the Tar Heels. Carolina is a 3.5-point home favorite. Let's talk about it, man. Like, in what world are you not taking the knee there? Like, I don't understand it at all. Yeah. None of the explanations have made sense.
Well, there is no explanation that makes sense. There is not a worse decision that you can make, and there is not an easier decision to make.
Yeah.
In that scenario.
Yep.
We've talked about it all week, and I said, if I was a coach in that press box, I know Shannon Dawson is on the field, the OC, but I would literally get on the headset when the decision was made not to knee it and say, listen, Coach Cristobal, I love it here. I love working for you, but if we do not knee this, I'm going to jump out of the press box and die in front of everybody. Like, I would have done something drastic. Like, if I was a coach on the sideline, I'd be like, Coach, I'm about to take my shirt off and go lay in midfield, like, unless we take, like, because I love this team so much.
Yeah.
Because I want to win so bad. There's, you can talk about it, not, you know, it shouldn't have been ruled a fumble, or the guy went to slide before he broke. Should never have gotten
doesn't
to that
matter.
Point.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
Should never have gotten to that point.
Yeah.
You pray all week that your team has a chance to get in victory formation
yep.
in the fourth quarter. And it is the easiest call to make. And you know what? People are like, oh, well, Tyler Van Dyke should have just taken a knee. No, don't put that on Tyler Van Dyke. Mm-mm. That's not on him. No, I would have taken it. I would have gone, oh boy, from Varsity Blues so quick. I'd have pretended to fall down, you know, pulled one of those. But like, I just don't know how, as a player and as somebody else on that staff, you put in all this work, right, for 12 opportunities, and you have such an obvious – it was almost to the point when it happened, Seth, I was like, I need to see his phone.
Yeah.
Like I need to see, like, you got a DraftKings account? Like, right. It's that egregious. It's yeah. the worst, and it's the second time he's done it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just something adding up here, man. Like, yeah. It's you don't make that mistake if you're Mario Cristobal. There's no way.
Yeah, man. I just – and so this is the thing for me too, right? Do you lose your football team? You know, like,
you could. We're going to find out yeah. if it goes bad now. See, here's the problem. Now, if you start losing, like, and this leads to a losing streak,
mm-hmm.
it's like really on you.
Yeah.
Like, it's the heat. You did it to yourself.
Yep.
This what's that graph? F around and find out.
Yeah.
Like, well, you F'd around and now you found out. That's why I'm taking North Carolina in the -3.5 at home.
Yeah. I mean, we're the same, man. My coach and I are both taking them. I just think UNC's playing real good football, number one. Let's not discount that. And
Drake the other piece is, witch.
Dude, I also think, too, outside of the App State game, they have looked outstanding. I mean, good on both sides of the football. Drake May, I think people have just conveniently forgot, was the darn Heisman Trophy frontrunner at the beginning of the year last year. And, like,
yeah.
he's gotten himself right. And so, man, they're doing something. Look, and what, Tez Walker playing this week?
Yeah, he's back. Tez Walker's back. Thank goodness the NCAA, you know, never cares about athletes association over there. I'll say this too. Like, North Carolina didn't have to have an elite defense to be good.
They
just need to be good enough to get enough stops. Because Drake May is a – and I'm going to say this. I'm projecting this. I'm not saying right now. I think Drake May is a better version of Justin Herbert. That's what I think.
I can see that. Yeah. I like that comp. Yeah, man. Dude.
Like, very similar. Like, yes. Watch. I mean, dude, that man makes so. It just, watch him. He just got that, too. He's got that, like, that X factor, right? You mm-hmm. talked about, like, Brock Bowers. Like, the, you know, like, I'm just surprised when I see him walking around. There's not, like, some bald dude in a wheelchair just following him.
Right. Yeah. Where's Professor X?
That's
yeah,
exactly
he's,
right.
He's close. Yeah. No, I agree, man. I think it's a good day to be a Tar Heel fan on Saturday. I just feel that. And I think it's tough if you're a Hurricane. All right, this is another one, man. It's fascinating to me given what happened last weekend. Kentucky kind of had an opportunity to say, we're not who everybody thinks we are. And they go into Athens and get just the doors blown off of them between the hedges. And now Mizzou's coming to town after a really tough loss against LSU where they play great for like 3.5 quarters. And then the wheels fall off in the last 5 minutes. Kentucky 2.5-point favorite at Kroger Field. How you feeling on this one?
Man, if I don't know, I'm sure you know Saturday in Athens. I'm sure your guys are going to love this. I don't know if y'all watch Crane and Company or not, but we talked about this all last week. Georgia's going to murder Kentucky.
Yes.
Like it was going to be a murder show. Like it's the worst matchup ever for Kentucky because there's like
100%.
The common misconception. Oh, Georgia's weakness, quote unquote, is against the run. Well, if you really looked at it, it was quarterbacks that were hurting them on the exterior. Devin Leary ain't going anywhere.
Nope.
They are a gap scheme in the box run team. You are running right into the belly of the beast. And they may not have Jalen Carter this year. They may not have Jordan Davis this year. But what they got is better than what you got. I can promise you that. So that was – I made so much money betting Georgia last week. It was like stealing, like I'm going to do it this week against Vandy. But I will say this. This is a tough game to bet because both teams are upset, right?
Yeah.
Coming off of big opportunities. One failed at home late. The other one failed on the road early. Early, that game was over.
Mm-hmm.
I like Kentucky defensively to be able to somewhat stifle Missouri's run game. I know Luther Burden is a freak. He's going to get his. But I think that Kentucky can run the ball on this Missouri defense. You look at Liam Cohen, their OC, Sean McVay protege, a lot of play action, a lot of motion pre-snap. I like Kentucky to find a way. I think this could end up being a heck of a game. Give me the Wildcats to bounce back at home, minus the 2.5.
My co-host has taken Mizzou, and my three KU graduate siblings are going to hate me when this comes out of my mouth. But I am also going to take Mizzou.
Do it.
And this is my reasoning, okay? I'm glad you brought Liam Cohen, because this is one of the things I talked about in our post game on Sunday. And that is, I thought Liam Cohen had an outstanding offensive game plan against Georgia on Saturday. If you go back and watch the first half of that game, there were Wildcats running free all throughout the different
levels. Devin missed a lot.
He missed a lot. There was a lot left on the table there. And if they don't commit these stupid penalties, they're in a bad spot. But that was educational for me because it made me go, is this the carpenter or the tools, right? And I think in this case, it's the tools. I mean, I think the carpenter's just right. Liam Cohen dialed it up perfect. Schematically,
for sure,
it's right where it needs to be. I just don't have faith in Devin Leary, man.
I don't think that's crazy.
Yeah.
I don't think that's crazy at all.
And to your point, man, God, I am just in love with freaking Luther Burden. I would pay cash money to see that dude play.
Drew, you want to talk about doing a good job as a carpenter who has the tools? The way they get him the ball,
yes,
he plays so many different spots. They do such a good job of finding ways to get him the ball. But yeah, look, there's been a lot of coaches that look like geniuses that didn't know really that much because they had great players, and a lot of coaches that look like idiots who are really smart because they didn't have good players.
Yeah, but I'm with you, man. I think that's a really compelling matchup and could be one of the games of the day if you're a degenerate that's willing to tune in and watch Mizzou and Kentucky play some football. But I'm here for it, man.
I'm down. I think
it's going to be awesome.
Smother me in it.
All right, last one for the docket. We're still going to pick dogs Vandy, but that's such a non-factor that the 10 other games I like.
Put
so
Vandy.
Yeah.
Money line.
That's right.
To win $1 trillion.
This one I think is fascinating because of how Chip Kelly's team is composed, okay? Yeah. UCLA going to Corvallis to play Oregon State, and what do we think of when we think of Coach Kelly? We think of those Oregon teams. We think of spreading you out. We think of offense. Damn, man, the Bruins are sitting here with the number 5 D in the country, and more importantly, my favorite metric, dude, they got the number 3 stop rate in America. The Bruins, yeah. Chip Kelly team. I don't know what to do with them. I think the fact that they finally settled and said, look, Dante Moore, you're our guy. We're rolling with you, okay? We're not going to do this quarterback triumvirate we tried to do at the beginning of the year, which I thought was nuts. But, like, that UCLA team's interesting to me, man, because I would not have given them a chance last weekend against Cam Ward and Wazoo. I loved the Cougs in that game. And, man, UCLA showed up and did it. So, where are you at on this? How you feeling about DJU and the Beavers and UCLA?
Is it at 4.5? Do you got it at 4.5? You got it at 3.5?
I still got it at 3.5.
But you got it at 3.5.
Yeah.
Here's what I think. Maybe Mick Cronin's rubbing off on him a little bit. New basketball coach.
You
said they play some defense in basketball. You know what I find fascinating? Last year, UCLA had success, and DTR, fantastic player, right?
Yeah.
I know he came out, didn't look great the other day. Young NFL quarterback. They don't have they got some weapons on the Browns, but he's not walking around with, a ton to work with.
Yeah.
They got to where they got because of physicality in the run game, right? UCLA, it wasn't just we'll spit it out and have a lot of fun and Jake Bobo and all these guys. They were downhill with Charbonnet, right?
Yep.
They were downhill. DTR was able to run it. Now this year, they're winning games with defense.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a coach that's known for one thing, but he's able to win another way, I think that shows strength in coaching ability, in malleability, yeah. right? Because every team, regardless of how well you recruit or what you do in the transfer portal, that team is going to take on an identity, and it's your job to put that team and their identity in the best position to win. And I think Chip realizes that, and it's a great way to protect a young quarterback that's going to be really good down the road, so you don't have to sit here and just put him in bad situation after bad situation. He's going to make mistakes, but that's part of it. But you're going to play the Beavers this weekend. DJU, I think, still the same DJU.
Yeah.
But Jonathan Smith may be the most underrated coach in the country. And I know Oregon State got lit up by Washington State. I think they looked past Cal last week when they gave up that number. I still like this team defensively. I think this is going to be an absolute slobber knocker. But I think Oregon State gets a defensive touchdown, and they're able to stop UCLA a couple more times. I think the dam breaks for the fourth quarter are in the fourth quarter for UCLA. So give me Oregon State, the Beavers. And yes, that was a Beaver dam pun joke.
I like it very much. I like it very much.
Give me the Beavers to cover.
My co-host is taking the Beavs too. Man, this is tough. I'm burnt last week because I was all in on the Cougs and UCLA up into my apple cart. But I'm with you, man. I just think that's a great home field. They always play well in Corvallis. I like the composition of this team. And look, they went to Pullman, and I think they got blitzed a little bit. I think they weren't
expecting – Pullman's a tough place to play. Ask Wisconsin. Ask some of these other teams that go up there.
Yeah, man. And look, Cam Ward's real. Like, he was real at Incarnate Word.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, he's a real player. And so, like, I think they got a little shell-shocked by that. They got blitzed out. And then, look, man, they made it a ball game. It was 35-33 final, 35-32 final, whatever it ended up being. Yep. I mean – they were right there. So I'm with you. I still think this is a real good football team, well-coached football team. And hey, lest we forget, they were a real good football team last year too. So this isn't like just a this year type of thing. So I think the culture there is good. I'm with you, man. I'm taking Oregon State, plus alma mater Adley Rushman. So go O's on that too after a tough week. Yeah,
tackled
week.
Christian McCaffrey one time.
That's right.
Hashtag never forget.
That's right. That's right. All right, so that's our 10. Big number to beat. 8-2 is the clubhouse leader, but I'm feeling good about your picks. Plus, if you have a good week, I'll have a good week.
Man, that's a good day at the office.
Travis Denning came on last week, our defending champ, and had himself another good day last week. So, yeah.
God, that's what I look. Put me in their arena.
Yeah,
let's do
that's
it.
Right. All right, last one, though. Let's talk dogs. Dogs, Vandy. I think, look, they're going to go to Nashville, and that game's going to be over before the brunch crowd leaves the Gulch. But, like, let's talk about this, okay? Where do you sit on this? I loved what y'all talked about last week. It was right where we sat. We had said all last week, this is a flag plant game for Georgia to remind everybody against Kentucky. Hey, guys, back-to-back national champs, still here, okay? Like, still got the guys. Don't forget about us, all right? And I think they did that effectively. And obviously, they're going to go into Nashville and do whatever they want to do. But long-term, as we project out to December 3rd in Atlanta, hopefully, what do you see from this team? What do you like? What makes you nervous about them?
You know, obviously the talent they have is going to be superior than 99% of the teams they play. And whenever you have that advantage, there's a lot of margin for error. One of the main things I like about this team is that Kirby doesn't have to manufacture adversity. Kirby doesn't have to draw to the spirits or the wind to let them know that people don't believe in them. Like, and Kirby's great at doing that. He can do it if he has to. But I think he's tapped into something as well. You don't want to be the class that lets down the previous two classes that won it.
Yeah.
That's you almost don't do that, you know, worse than you want to win it, right? Because the two groups before you won it, you don't want to be that group that's like, oh, well, we had that, you know, we were going to have that dynasty, and this is a group that blew it. Embarrassment is a real motivating factor.
Yeah.
It's like my brother said, like, he had a buddy in high school. They were best friends. He used to make fat jokes all the time, you know, not trying to be mean, but, you know, just joking around. And now his friend's skinny and a lawyer. Like, sometimes embarrassment, especially with the 18 to 22 year olds, it can yield a lot of good things.
Yeah.
But when I look at Georgia, I think something that people are forgetting is that they may not have those marquee names up front, but they are still able to set the tone in the line of scrimmage in the box, and we know they can get after the passer. And having Malachi and Bullard and those guys back there who can come downhill and affect the run, who can stay back there and affect the pass, who can keep explosive plays from happening. One of the reasons that Georgia dominates a lot of these games is against normal teams, against humans, those would be 80-yard touchdowns. Against Georgia, they're 35-yard gains. Like, so now you have to run five more plays to score, which opens up your margin for error because you don't have enough talent. But Georgia's offensive line does not get enough credit. And I know they haven't run the ball as dominant as people wanted to. I know you've had injuries in the backfield. But from a pass pro standpoint, the time that Carson Beck has to sit in the pocket is unbelievable. Ladd McConkey is coming back. Haru the Great White Ninja. We already know about Brock Bowers. Okay. Like, he's from Planet Krypton or somewhere that's even better than that. Then Dominic Lovin and Rod Thomas eventually are going to come on. Like, they are going to come on. We saw a little bit, right, last week against Kentucky. And the more guys that get healthy, but this offensive line gives Carson Beck time. And when you're developing a guy, and Carson's not a freshman. He's not a guy that's been there for 1 year. I mean, my man's paying his taxes. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's an older guy. He's handling business. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, all that jazz. But I think when you look at Georgia, when you don't have to manufacture adversity, when you have a talent gap with pretty much every other team, and you're able to give a quarterback that's developing time to experience guys on the outside who are getting healthy, Georgia has not played their best football yet, and they're still winning. What do we always say in college basketball? You want to be peaking at the right time. Mm-hmm. What do we always say in the NFL when you make the playoffs? You want to be peaking at the right time. I think this Georgia team is setting up to be peaking at the right time. And there's no real, I think Georgia and Michigan are the two best teams in college football. That's what I think. There's some similarities there as well. And Michigan does have more experience overall than Georgia does. But I think we may be heading for that showdown, depending on how it works out in the playoff, right? Could be 1-2 where you play each other in the national championship game. But this team has not hit their peak yet. And their trajectory right now is that they're going to be elevating and getting better and better and better while people are still doubting them. Then that's what you want at the end when you go get after somebody's ass a little bit.
I think that's a fantastic point. One of the things we talk about a lot is I'm such a firm believer that a football team is a living, breathing organism. And it is constantly changing over the course of a season. And this is one of the things, and look, I know it's against tradition and there's arguments against it and all these things, right? But it's one of my arguments for the 12-team playoff is, look, I'm not going to be the same team December 1st that I was on September 1st. And if I lose early but am now the best team in the country, why should I be discounted out, right? Like, if I'm playing hot, and think about this baseball model, the Rangers wouldn't have been in, right? Yeah. And they look like they could win the World Series now. And so I love that about it. I love the evolution of a team. And I don't think there's any better sport for the growth of a team than football because of the mass quantity of guys, right? Yeah. And I think to your point too, with back-to-back national titles and you had stability at the quarterback position and you had like not big turnover in big spots and you had fillers, whether it was Jalen filling in for Jordan Davis or Stetson staying unilateral there, like whatever it was, right? The identity was kind of already built. And I think this team, they're figuring out who they are. Yeah. And to your point, when that happens, and it may have happened the second half on the Plains, I'm going to be honest with you. I think they found something on the second half at Auburn and leaned it right into Kentucky. And if they keep escalating up that mountain, man, woo, look out.
And I look, and a couple things. To the point about the playoff, I'm all for meritocracy. Let's settle it on the field.
Yeah.
Right? You think you're the best team? Well, go out there and play like you're the best team, right? If that means you have to play two games or three games to win it, well, then you got to play two games or three games to win it. I would much rather settle it on the field than get to a point where we feel like all the best teams at that time didn't get in. And that's not discounting the regular season early or anything like that. If you have an awful regular season early, even if you're playing hot late, you're not going to get in.
Yep.
So I don't like that argument. The second thing is when I saw Carson Beck at halftime of the South Carolina game, when Kirby was talking and they're down 14-3 and you're the heir apparent at quarterback, wink at the camera. Wink.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, all right. Yeah. Okay. Like I believe it. Live bet. How much can I possibly live bet on Georgia?
Right.
Thanks
That's
for
right.
telling me, Carson. But no, I mean, again, you don't want to be, it's almost like the son of the famous father that doesn't want to, that, you know, wants to make sure his father's proud of him. Like you don't want to be the one that lets down the legacy. And I think this team, while they may do it in a little bit of a different way, but while they may not do it with the amount of star power defensively that you've had, again, they're better than you are.
Yeah.
They're still better than you are. And that's just how it is.
Well, we're so fired up you came on to hang with us today, Jake, man. We really enjoyed it. Before we go, tell our listeners how they can support you and support your show.
Yeah, Seth, this is a great time, man. I want that. See, now you got me all gassed up with that 8-2. Like,
that's
like,
it.
I want whatever the trophy is. But yeah, look, if you like talking ball, you know, the old school way without all the crazy stuff in it, just go to YouTube. It's the best way to find us. Crane and Company, C-R-A-I-N and Company. We go live each weekday morning from 7:30 a.m. to 9 a.m. Eastern. That's 6:30 to 8 a.m. Central. Those are the only two time zones I know. I'm sorry. It's on Apple Podcasts as well. It's on Spotify. It stays up there. We got live call-ins, kind of like Feinbaum, I guess you could say, but we're really not like that. We got a live chat. It's a lot of fun. We got a great group. It's me, my brother who played wide receiver in college, and David Cohn who played quarterback in Michigan. And we're talking the nitty-gritty, man. We get into it. So come hang out with us.
Well, look, if y'all listen for this past hour and y'all aren't all in on Jake and immediately going and subscribing to the show, I don't know what's wrong with y'all. So y'all make sure and support
it,
Jake, support Crane and Company. We'll have all the links in the show notes. Make sure and get on that. And look, brother, you're welcome back anytime, man. We enjoyed it.
Seth, this is great. You guys do such a fantastic job. I was really jacked when you guys reached out. There's very few shows that I'll tap into in the sports world because I just deal with it 24/7. You can just ask my wife, but you guys really do a fantastic job, man.
We appreciate it, brother, man. We really appreciate it.
All right, y'all be good.
Hey, George is better now.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.